You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, I'm the host of this wonderful podcast. And joining me, because we haven't talked enough this week for some reason, is a man who did not spend 9 hours being grilled by the United States Senate, Mr. Tony East. Tony, how are you doing?
I'm good. That is not how my last 2 days have gone. That is accurate.
Was that apolitical enough for you?
Yeah, that's fine. You did not say a name. You did not give any thoughts. That's exactly how your topical introductions of me should go.
Yeah.
No, this is a Pacers podcast, obviously, not a political one. We are talking about the coaching search, and me and Adam try to put off coaching search discussions, not because we're just actively putting it off, but mostly because all the new info is basically just like a slight update on one candidate. But there's been so much of it over the last week that we figured it's time to dig in and talk more about the coaching search, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to publish this Wednesday night, Thursday morning kind of range, and they'll probably hire a coach right after we do it. So,
well, the thing is, before we dig into anything that that all these source reports coming out are saying, is we both said to each other, and when we were talking about this before, that we expected the process would heat up when the finals ended, right? Because they could interview the two Heat assistants. And this wasn't supposed to be first on our discussion list of the coaching topics, but Miami Heat Beat reported that Dan Craig and Chris Quinn are both interviewing with the Pacers this week for that position. We both kind of knew that. We'd heard that from various people before, but now the finals are over, hearing it from a Heat reporter to me, I think cements that is why the delay in the process was as long as it was.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm assuming they were conducting Zoom interviews or some kind of phone call, whatever you want to call it, type interview in the first round. But the second round, obviously, because the guy you're going to hire, no matter who it is, from the top range of the bottom, is going to be a seven-figure job. So you probably want to talk to that person in person, because when they have to move to Indianapolis and all that kind of stuff. So you don't want to just hire a guy over Zoom. And if they had one of the Heat guys as one of the guys they liked, because they probably talked to one of them over Zoom, you know, from the bubble, but they would have to wait until the bubble ended because that person was going to be able to leave because of the weird quote, one of the obviously needed quarantine rules. So it makes sense. Plus, with a draft not immediately after the season ends, and free agency probably even later, there's still plenty of time to hire a coach and get everything, kind of your ducks in the row before you get to look at prospects. And the Pacers don't have a first-round pick either, so draft's even less important. So they have a lot of leeway in this process.
Absolutely, and I think that makes sense for the Heat assistants too. I think that the Pacers are at the point in the process, and I know that, you know, that they cut down their people from the virtual / non-in-person interview stage to the in-person interview stage, and that is part of the holdup is getting them to Indiana too as well. But you know, we heard from Jay Michael of the Indy Star that, right, like that Jay Chauncey didn't do a virtual interview. His first interview was an in-person one. So that's how you know they're at that point in the process, right? Because we're hearing about that conversation has been had and stuff like that. So the Heat assistant holdup is over. And, you know, the other stuff that we mentioned is, like, if they were really wowed by one of the non-Heat assistant candidates, they could have hired them before the finals were over, right? So they probably really liked one of them and wanted to talk to them, or maybe even both of them, and wanted to talk to them in person. So there's a chance that after those two interviews, unless the candidate they want is being courted by one of their teams, and we'll talk about them later, it seems like the hire could happen kind of soon, right?
Yeah. One other theory of mine is they're trying to get the finances in a row kind of thing. Across the league, they're trying to figure out how much money they lost this year.
Not the Pacers' finances.
Well, every team is what I mean. And yeah. So, you know, they're just probably still discussing how much they actually want to spend on a coach, because the candidates they have could range anywhere from 3 to 7 a year, I think is probably a fair range.
Yeah, what did Doc just get, like 8 or over 8?
Yeah, D'Antoni's probably the high-end. Bilps is probably not quite 7 or 8, more like 5 or 6. And then probably some of these assistants is probably like 3 or 4, depending on who, you know, how much experience and whatnot, and how desperate somebody is to take the job. So that could be part of it. I just think, honestly, it's more about just taking their time, because they don't have any pressure to do it today. Just because draft November 18th, free agency December 1st, that's like preliminary, that could easily change. No first-round pick, so no need to, like, you know, really be heavily scouting, although I'm sure they will a little bit because they might trade in the first round. Who knows? They could possibly want to do that. And obviously, you don't want to be caught flat-footed. But even if they hired a coach on November 1st, they'd have more days than they normally would for most processes, right? Because most time you don't hire a coach until early, you know, especially for the Pacers where they lost in the playoffs.
Early June.
Yeah, early June, and then draft the 20th to 25th range. So you have 3 weeks. So they still have basically that amount of time. Right. And I think Pritchard also knows wisely. I mean, he doesn't have the same leeway that a Bird or Donnie Walsh did because of just what they're able to build before. So Bird one is Larry Bird's never really gonna be fired because, you know, he's the legend, greatest Indiana basketball player of all time, probably. Like from in Indiana, I mean, not just like
you can get rid of the probably.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking like if you counted Pacer players, he probably like, but yeah, he is. And then Walsh had so much success early on that like it kind of bought him the rest of his career, right? I mean, they were so good from like 95 to 2004 that he was going to be fine. But Pritchard doesn't have that same kind of leeway, and there's a chance that if this coach is a failure, both him and the coach had jobs come, you know, 3 or 4 years from now. So it's a pretty big decision for Pritchard.
Absolutely right, especially like a disgruntled star not wanting to stay kind of has back a core flexion on the front office, right?
Happened twice.
Who knows how the first big team he truly built is going to turn out, right? So this is one of the foundational pieces of his resume going forward with the Pacers, and something we both talked about kind of before the show too, that could be holding up the process a tiny bit, is like with MDA, and you just talked about the league's finances, and I said that mentioned Doc Rivers getting $8 million is like maybe because they're already paying McMillan and because they're the Pacers, they don't make a lot of money and they might not have fans next year. Like maybe a cheap, like if the difference between the guy you love, maybe that's D'Antoni, and the guy you kind of love is like a lot of money, you make that decision, you know, you value the cost and benefit there. And that's not something that I'm sure normally happens, but it's a different league right now. And I don't know if the Pacers are being cheap on purpose. I have no idea, but I'm not saying that, you know, teams around the league are definitely going to have to start thinking that way if there's no fans next year. So it's certainly something that is plausible.
Yeah. The other thing I'm kind of thinking about is the two kind of, I guess, names that have been floated front runners in the past, right? One's D'Antoni, one's now Chris Finch, according to Kevin O'Connor.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah. Well, think about it. They're also two, they're both offensive minded coaches, but they kind of come from different have different strengths, right? Chris Finch is kind of known for turning kind of centers, forward type players into successes, where into like, you know, you can see with DeMarcus Cousins when he was there for a little bit, he was able to coach him. And then you can go to, before that, you can go to Jokic with him when he's in Denver. But D'Antoni is more success with guards in the Pacers. It could be a decision of who they're, what they need to focus on, right? Are they going to have their top guard in one of the offensive, or are they going to have their, they focus on their top center? I mean, that's could be the kind of question going forward, at least.
Definitely. I'm sure that's come up in the interview process. And yeah, let's get to Finch more specifically, because Adam, I want to give both of us a pat on the back here, because show numero uno, the first day they fire McMillan, we do the podcast the next day. Who are the candidates? We both talked about Chris Finch. Look at
Hasn't he been a candidate for like all the other jobs?
Yeah. David Griffin mentioned his name as a candidate for the Pelicans job, the team he is currently an assistant for. I'm sure other teams have interviewed him as well, but I admittedly have not kept up outside of like the huge Ty Lue, Mike D'Antoni level names. I don't really know a lot of the granulars for the other openings, but I do know, from reporting and David Griffin's quotes, that Finch is at least being considered there. But it seems like they're down to four finalists in New Orleans, and Finch is not one of them, though. So there's a chance the Pacers are the only job he is in heavy consideration for, yes.
And it makes sense. If you guys haven't read, I'll go check out Caitlin Cooper's, where they got an article in Indie Corners about
Fantastic.
His coaching style. And it makes sense, right? If they're going to build this team around Sabonis going forward, which I think both you and I think they should, even if they bring back,
they might kind of have to.
Yeah, but even if they bring back their guard, I think Sabonis offers the most opportunity to, like, they have a guy under contract for so many years, and he has the chance to sort of keep improving, right? Go from, you know, went from being a starter to an all-star to could he become an All-NBA type player? And I think he has that potential at times. I think at least at his best, he shows that, and he can get a coach to bring the best out of him. And can you find the pieces around him? And does that kind of team sort of provide a new window for this Pacer team, because it's a unique one, right? It's sort of something that, like, instead of being the traditional method, sometimes when you zag into zigging, that helps you like exceed expectations at times, right? I mean, I think that's the reason Denver's been so successful, to be honest. I think because they're not built like every other team in the league right now. Every top team is built pretty much the same way, right? Surrounded by basically a forward, you want to call Giannis a forward, I guess, forward type center player who's really good.
That really, ball dominant guy and good wings.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they're sort of different than that. They're built through like a really good guard and a really good center, which isn't really the way, it's kind of the old school style of basketball. So that can help a team. So I wonder if that's what they're thinking about right now. And also, honestly, he might just be the best candidate out there because he's super experienced, right? I mean, he's been coaching all over the world for the past like 15 years.
Well,
stuff like that.
Let's take a break and talk about him a little more and then some of the other stuff, because I have more stuff on Finch I want to talk about.
All right. Well, first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by our wonderful friends over at rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of car makers and models, it is now impossible for your local chain stores to stock up on all the parts your car might need. So why even bother? Go to rockauto.com, which is a family business serving auto parts customers online for over 20 years. RockAuto.com has all the auto and body parts for all the cars and manufacturers that you would ever need. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamps to motor oil and even a new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for do-it-yourselfers or professionals. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, Tony, so you had more on Chris Finch. What else did you want to hit on?
Yeah, you know, I think this, as we get more into the Pacers hiring process and we see that they are leaning into a lot of assistants here, right? The two Heat assistants are still alive. We've heard a lot about Finch. We heard a lot about some other guys who are assistants around the league. This seems like a kind of a non-Pacers-esque maneuvering. Between all the leaks, like, that was all non-Pacers-esque. That's pretty rare for them. But, you know, usually they just are like, oh, former player, or like, oh, here's our own assistant getting promoted. It seems like they're not doing it Pacers-y. It's more shaking it up, which is off-brand for them, which is cool. And I think that they're kind of pursuing might be the wrong word, you know, like Nick Nurse and Eric Spoelstra, obviously huge hits in the coaching department. And it seems like teams are kind of leaning more into that, like, former lower-level head coach who becomes an assistant kind of guy who can be an innovator. And I think Finch, you know, he coached for those who don't know, he coached the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, sick team name, in the D-League. So he was the D-League Coach of the Year, led that team to the finals. I think that beyond that, he's proven, right, with three different organizations, Rockets, Nuggets, and Pelicans now, that he can be an asset to a bench and that he's got offensive chops. I think that because he's got the D-League head coaching experience too, just such a wide variety of stuff, I think that can be a good, you know, okay, we're kind of copying the model of what has been big for the team recently, or big for other teams recently, and is bringing success to them. And maybe that can work for us, but it's kind of like a safer way of doing that, right? Because I don't think he can be bad given his wide variety of old jobs. And I just wanted to bring up a lot of the stuff he had done before and how it kind of fits the model of what the NBA is doing.
Yeah. Also, did you know something interesting that Steve Simon, the Pacers, I guess I assume next owner, I think that's been reported, he's the son of Herb, has been doing a couple interviews.
I did not know that.
I think he went on one of the NBA shows. Didn't really say anything like important, but he sort of spoke a little bit. And I do wonder if that's why the process is a little bit different, because ownership's now in charge. Well, I think Herb clearly ran the team. I mean, him or Mel, but Herb Simon was the guy running the team. He's kind of been the face of the team for the past 35 years. And I wonder if maybe he's not running it as much because he is 80 something years old at this point. So I wonder if his son is running. I wonder if it's why, one, we're seeing a more, maybe his son isn't as enamored with the, because Herb Simon has a knack for being enamored with like big names, right? Or superstars, yep. I guess. Like Larry Bird has been his kryptonite his entire, right? He hired him and he can't get away from him. And maybe his son is more thinking like the modern NBA owner and trying to, you know, find that like Nick Nurse type, Mike D'Antoni, you know, guru type player, type coach. I mean, so that's all. That's the one thing I've kind of noticed the whole process. But
you mentioned Kevin O'Connor's report earlier. For the specifics there, he tweeted that Chris Finch is considered the front runner to be the Pacers' next head coach. At this point in the process, that was yesterday. That was Tuesday, so very recently. He mentioned in the tweet, Chauncey Billups and Dave Yeager previously had conversations with Indiana. We already knew that from other reporting and such. But as a follow-up to that, you know, Billups is a favorite amongst some of you who listen and tweet at me. But Dave Yeager is a favorite amongst
none of anyone. No, it's praise, not Dave Yeager. Let's get together, Colin.
Let's pivot to our other report that will make you Yeager people. Let me say this correctly. That will make the people who don't want Yeager, which is everyone, a little happy.
Never Yeagers.
Cletus Murray, the Athletic, another Athletic Celtics guy coming in with Pacers news. But he says Mike D'Antoni's still a candidate for the Pacers job. Makes sense. I mean, he's one of the best available guys and isn't looking like he's, you know, going to get any of the jobs left, but still a candidate for the Pacers job. And then he said David Yeager's interview wasn't impressive.
Adam,
rejoice.
Yeah, I think I read that on a podcast earlier this week. And just, maybe it was last week. I don't know what it was. And just
rejoice started. Is too strong. He's not bad, but I don't really get him being this far in the process, honestly. Just the Marc Gasol butting heads and all the butting heads of the Kings coaches. And, like, it took him 3 years to get the Kings from bad to less bad. And he made the Grizzlies a little better. Like, he's good at X's and O's, I guess, but he's not good enough at X's and O's to make you go, oh, you can, I'm okay with those bad things, you know? So, no.
So do we know what kind of, like, system or anything, what Billups might run? Is there any of this, right? Like,
that's why I understand that the unproven guys are cool options and players like him, but I don't get how he can be someone's favorite candidate. Like, we know nothing about the guy as a coach.
Yeah.
We know nothing.
The thing I find interesting about Billups is, he has the playing credentials, right? He was like borderline probably at one point a top 10 player in the league, if not top. You know, I mean, he was an NBA Finals MVP, but I don't know if he was like a top 5 player. But he was a really, really good point guard, which kind of fits that coaching mold, right? He clearly wants back in the NBA, right? He almost took the Cavs GM job, but wanted more money. They were willing to pay him. He's, you know, involved with ESPN and really anxious to get back in the league. You know, and I know some of these point guards like Jason Kidd, I think Mark Jackson, too, didn't even have to be an assistant. Maybe even Doc Rivers didn't have to be an assistant before they became a head coach. So there is that chance, I guess, that he could easily just be a good coach right off the bat. You know, those three names are hit or miss, right? One's been – I think Doc's been kind of the only good one of those three. And then, you know, even like somebody like Steve Nash had some coaching experience, I guess. So I guess what I worry with him is he comes in more as like a big picture kind of guy. And I feel like that doesn't fit what the Pacers want. Like, he fits like a roster that's already kind of set and, like, you know what they're going to run, right? It's almost like, you know, even when Frank Vogel went to, you know, the Lakers, they knew what they were really going to run mainly. I mean, obviously, they can make some marginal changes, but it was about, like, a certain style they were going to play that they were going to fit LeBron and AD that was already going to happen no matter who the coach was. And I feel like he fits that kind of situation better than, like, a Pacers situation where he has to really dig in and, like, you know, honestly pull games out of his ass in January because, like, the Pacers need to win 45 to make the playoffs versus, like, guaranteed 50 because of who they have on the roster.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. I mean, he might be good. He might be really good. I don't know. But it's certainly a risk at minimum.
On Brogdon's radio-a-thon, right, he was talking about the coaching search, and he mentioned something that aligned with what KP said. He talked about the players' coach, right? And KP said he wanted a coach who can communicate on the level of the players, and Brogdon talked about the players' coach who knows the right day to push you and not to push you, and brought up Doc Rivers, ironically, as an example of that. So to me, the appeal of Chauncey, and I get this from fans of the team, right? He is the guy that Brogdon is talking about. He knows the rigors of the league. He was really good. Kyle Lowry and Marcus Smart have both given him credit for just, like, consulting them and helping them get better in their career. He wasn't even paid as a coach to do that. He just helped them get better, right?
Oh, he clearly wants to be in the NBA doing it because that's what he loves.
Yeah.
He loves it. He loves the game. And that's a huge plus for anybody hiring somebody who loves that.
There are guaranteed pros. The dude has never held the clipboard, right? Like, I just can't know. And it's not his fault. It's not a knock on him. I'm just saying, like, I can't know. And I'm surprised he's so well thought of amongst fans. It's like, with these assistants, we can know a little bit, especially the ones that have G League head coaching experience. I know that's a different level, but, you know, that's more info and more to look at. And being an assistant, even, you communicate with players, you see the day-to-day operations, all this stuff, right? Even if it's still kind of guesswork, if they've never coached an NBA game, you get more info and you can kind of form, even if they're not as good, you can form opinions with Billups. I can't get anywhere. I mean, he might be great, but he might just be, like, awful at the same time. I have no idea what to make of it. I feel like he'd probably be better Like, can he be like an assistant coach and like the vice president of basketball operations at the same time and then pick what he wants to do between head coaching and GM next?
I'm not sure he needs to be like a coaching job. I just think he needs to be on the other side of the equation, you know, not a player, right? I mean, Steve Kerr, right? Steve Kerr is the GM or whatever he worked for. I think ended up being the GM of the Suns, then left and became head coach of TV and then became the head coach of the Warriors. And that helped him, right? He didn't necessarily have to be like X and O's and understand, you know, that way, but he understood like a roster building and where to tweak a roster to make it work. And that was his biggest kind of thing with the Warriors was he opened up their game for them, basically, right? He looked at the roster and said, if I put Green on the starting lineup and I become a three-point, you know, and say, take as many threes as you want, that changes things. It wasn't a huge system. It was just a really good kind of philosophy, right? And that's maybe the kind of coach he is. Like I said, I'm not sure it fits for the Pacers, who are not at a level where like that could be successful because they need somebody. You know, what made McMillan successful in the regular season was that he had this very rigid philosophy that kind of exploited bad teams on any night, right? On any night, like the Pacers were, I don't have the stat for me, but I'm sure if we looked at their record against teams that did make the playoffs or were a bottom 10 team in their conference, they had an amazing record against them. And I bet even they a lot of times were able to catch some of the better teams on a weird night, whether it's a back-to-back or a West Coast trip, and beat them because they just played at an intensity level that most teams play at night to night, and they have this kind of weird style that not everything was playing. Teams didn't know how to adjust to it. When it came to the playoffs, Milan was screwed because teams see it for one game, figure it out, and beat them the rest of the way. He didn't have any other tricks in the bag. So I'm just not sure Billups fits that kind of mold. And obviously you want somebody a little different than that, but you still want somebody who can help you win 45 to 50 games every night, and you have to sort of get that with like X and O style, I think.
Right.
So
yeah. The other part of Cleveland, back to the tweet from Clevis Murray, he said Mike D'Antoni's still a candidate for the job. I just don't know what to make of the D'Antoni Pacers relationship anymore because
money.
I know that's a big part of it, but you know, with the whole, like, for a while I thought the reason that, because I kept saying I thought he was going to get it. I thought he was going to be the guy they hire, and the reason it hadn't happened is the Sixers. And as soon as the Sixers thing was over, I was like, okay, they did their smoke screen. They made it look like they're interviewing all these people. They got feelers out. Now they're going to hire their guy. And they haven't yet. And nothing was stopping them outside of, like I said, the Heat assistants. So, perhaps money is a huge factor with him.
Well, so I think it's two things.
Go ahead.
If on the Pacers end, it might be money, but on the D'Antoni end, this is probably going to be his last job he takes, I would have to guess. I mean, he's 69 years old. Does he really want to coach a team where their superstars in flux? You don't know that they're going to be in 2 years. I mean, I think he really wants to, I would think, I mean, this, I think Kevin O'Connor tweeted this earlier in this, maybe 2 weeks ago, that he's the front runner still for the Pelicans job. Because I think that's the job he wants, because that's the team where he goes in. He knows he has a lot of talent and he has a lot of like players he can mold to fit him. Right. I mean, whether it's from Brandon Ingram to Zion to Lonzo, he has a lot of just players who have a lot of talent and
appealing job.
You know, in 4 years, that team could, if things break right, could be competing for a championship, right? It could be a good enough team when you have Zion's at 23 or 24, especially if he is transcendent level, like he looked at times, right? If he is the next, you know, mix of LeBron and Shaq, he could be in the finals when he's 24 with some talent. Yeah. And that could be, you know, D'Antoni's last chance to get to a championship. If not, he might think he's better off waiting a year and seeing if one of those, if the Bucks job opens up, for example, right? I mean, that's probably the next one they probably look at or something like that. I don't know who else will get fired next year. I mean, I doubt like Vogel will be the one, but he's not going to get fired for winning championship.
Yeah, the Budenholzer is the guy that everyone's going to stare at. Yeah.
Right. I mean, what other like top job could there be available after this season, right? The Clippers will have a new guy, so that won't be available. I mean, I guess it could be. Who knows? They could shit the bed again, hire another coach in a year. Ballmer has unlimited amounts of money, but that's what I mean. I think I'm just not sure the Pacers are as appealing for D'Antoni, especially if they won't come to his financial number. That's what he wants. He wants money.
Well, this is an interesting transition that you just did, because we talked about before the show, we wanted to look at the other jobs available in the league and how they kind of relate to the Pacers search and at the same time kind of rank the openings. And that was more interesting when the candidates were more intertwined, but they still are to an extent. You know, we just talked about D'Antoni and stuff like that. So you want to do that now?
Yeah, but first, let's go to another one of our sponsors of this podcast and our wonderful friends over at BuiltBar.com. They sponsored us for the better part of this year, and we will keep harping on them. They make an amazing protein bar that's completely 100% covered in chocolate. It comes in 18 amazing flavors, everything from cookies and cream, banana bread, to toffee, almond. to my favorite one, the peanut butter brownie, which is 19 grams of protein. These bars are great if you're trying to lose or maintain weight while indulging in delicious treats. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high in protein, high in fiber, and great for the keto diet. And right now, if you go to builtbar.com, use the promo code locked on, you can get 20% off your next order. That's the promo code locked on for 20% off at builtbar.com. Okay, so there were what, six head coach openings heading into the offseason, if you count the
seven, right?
Seven. Let me go. Houston, Pacers, Clippers, Pelicans, Thunders, Thunderbull, Bulls. What am I missing?
76ers.
76ers.
And Nets. Right. Yeah.
And Nets. There were eight. Okay, so there were eight. I'm sorry. There were eight. Wow. I'm sorry. There were six.
That's
before
insane.
The
team. That might never happen again, like in our life.
There were six, and then there were the two kind of unknown, like random firings, I guess. I guess we knew that Jones was getting fired, but like
the Clippers were
out of nowhere, right? Nowhere. And so for now, what we've seen, Steve Nash has gone to Brooklyn. Billy Donovan has gone to the Bulls. Oh, and there's the Knicks too, which is nine, but they were hired way earlier. Thibodeau went to the Knicks, and Doc Rivers. So
that was before the bubble, wasn't it?
Yeah, Doc Rivers goes to the Sixers. So that leaves five openings: Houston, Indiana, Clippers, Pelicans, and Thunder.
Yep. So ranking them is not the ideal point of what we're doing, although we did kind of want to riff on other NBA teams, so that's always fun. But
so what do you think the number one opening is? I mean, I think
Clippers. It's 100% yeah. Clippers to me, because the biggest reason to me is Danny LaRusso says this all the time. Ownership, biggest competitive advantage of the NBA. Steve Ballmer has too much money, right? So if you're the coach of the Clippers and you say, hey, if you spend an extra $3 million, including the tax, we can have a really good backup point guard and probably win a championship. He'll do it. He'll do it. No questions asked, right? So not only do they already have a really good roster and they're like one minor-ish move and decent summer away from possibly title favorites, but, I mean, they just have the infrastructure and core to be set up for so long that
even
with the Zion growth factor being an appeal and James Harden being an appeal, I think the Clippers is head and shoulders above the rest. Which is good, because the Pacers and Clippers have basically zero overlapping interesting candidates.
So the question I have is what happens if they flame out again next year? And both guys have options.
Then you have to look at some higher up stuff going on in the organization.
In my thought, Kawhi definitely re-signs on a 5-year whatever, because I think if they flame out, it's because he's not as good as he – like Kawhi has underratedly has like a lingering injury, I feel like, and that's kind of been an issue. Yeah. Right? When he won the finals 2 years ago, he basically dragged his left foot to the championship. Now, I think if he has to face LeBron, that might not be as successful, right? I think he got away in that playoffs the fact that he really didn't have to face a really tough small forward. I mean, Jimmy Butler in the second round was probably the toughest one, but the Philly team was imploding, and that was his toughest series. I mean, he barely pulled that series out. I mean, literally, it was a game-winning shot in the corner. Because, I mean, I think Giannis just wasn't ready to that point. So I do wonder if that's an issue. And then I think they would probably just like let Paul George walk at that point. If they blow up, it's probably going to be blamed on him, I would think. But I don't know.
Yeah. So the Clippers candidates that I have just quickly Googled as well as kept track of myself. I guess there's a little overlap because Mike Brown apparently is kind of like high up on their ranking list, which is crazy to me. But whatever, I'm not in charge of a hiring process. The Pacers apparently had some interest in him, but it doesn't sound like he got very far. Wes Unseld Jr. From the Nuggets. Ty Lue, obviously their own assistant. Ty Lue.
You think they bake a cake for Ty Lue that says Clippers head coach and then it doesn't happen?
Ty Lue is, I think, going to be the holdup for every non-Thunder Pacers team left.
I think Rockets are going to go cheap. Well, we're talking about, I think they're going to cheap out.
Oh, I do not think the Rockets are going to go cheap. I think that,
what do you mean?
I
their
think,
owner's broke. So
I agree that their owner is broke. But I think when your top three candidates you know, they wanted Doc, right? It was reported that they wanted Doc Rivers.
I don't think they could afford him. I started to think they're not going to be able to afford anybody as head coach.
It's possible. If they hire Sam Cassell, everybody can immediately say, yeah, okay. Sam Cassell, also a Clippers guy on this list, by the way. So
I think Atkinson's pretty cheap as well, I think, actually.
Atkinson and Jeff Van Gundy and Lou are all moderately expensive, I would say.
But you think so? I think Atkinson might not be that expensive to be, because he got fired from a job, and it's not like he's – I don't know. Maybe
I guess if he doesn't get another job. I can't believe
I guess the question
he hasn't been hired by the Thunder yet, whatever.
Jeff Van Gundy, too, is Is he willing to take less money to get back in the league? Like, you know what I mean? I don't know.
He's been in the league for forever, so that would surprise me. But.
Right, so he's desperate to get back in, so it'll take less money. Or
I think he lives in Houston. I think Brian Windhorst of ESPN said that part of the appeal for Jeff Van Gundy is that he lives in Houston and he hasn't wanted to move his family for a job. But if he doesn't have to move, I think maybe. But
gotcha. Well, my thought is
– what's second most appealing to you beyond that? Is the Pacers number two for you? Because it is not number two for me.
Well, I just said Houston. I think Houston number two.
Yes, I agree. James Harden in his prime, guaranteed playoffs, very high chance of conference semis every year, and you have Russell Westbrook and a genius GM, not willing to spend owner. That's a big knock here. But the Rockets coaching search has been so weird, though, because it seems like every candidate, Sam Cassell, I just said, Ty Lue, and I think we got them all, Jeff Van Gundy, are the biggest three left. Is like they spend so long with every guy that they're really slow and involved.
Yeah, I also maybe this is crazy talk, but I do think if they can just get Westbrook and Harden healthy, like in the same time in the playoffs, there might be a shot at making some kind of run with something. I don't know. Maybe Westbrook is totally just not that player, and maybe he never was, to be honest. But I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks they can make work a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, I think Houston is probably has a high floor, low ceiling, right? They're probably second round and out max every year. Yeah. This year they were they made it the first one this year barely. So they lost.
I think James Harden is good enough that you have a chance at the conference finals every year. I'm not saying
I think his certain weaknesses when it comes to just like being able to play with other players is what's going to drag him down eventually, right? I think the reason they were so good that one year is because Chris Paul was – oddly enough, the guy kind of dragging that team at times in a way because he was just such a good player. I mean,
so
and where Harden was like, would be dominant for, you know, let's say 36 minutes, but then the last 12, you had Chris Paul and him kind of trading off and Chris Paul taking more of the lead, and that was really helpful at times. So I don't know if they could really get past. I mean, I don't think, I'm not even sure they're probably are properly seeded this year, right? They're probably the fourth best team in that conference, if not even a little lower, depending how Dallas improves.
Yeah, definitely. They're five. Okay, so back to the Clippers for 2 seconds. Of their top candidates, I haven't heard any D'Antoni stuff for them, so seems like none of them overlap with the Pacers, the Rockets, biggest five candidates. Lou, like we said, Jeff Van Gundy. Like we said, I said Ty Lue already, didn't I? Sorry. John Lucas, their own assistant. I don't think he's interviewed anywhere else. And Kenny Atkinson. So also does not seem like, even if that job is more appealing than the Pacers job, there's no overlap. So
can I make a change? I just think the Pelicans might be the second most appealing job.
That's what I was going to say. I think Pelicans are next for me.
I think I just talked myself into Rockets maybe not being. I think it's the third most now I think about it.
I think working for Tillman could be a nightmare. So
well, I think the Pelicans potential. I mean, we're working for I forget the last name, the Bensons, right? They were kind of crazy too.
They're trying to get the Saints to play at LSU Stadium. Just have fans.
Crazy people. But I think the Pelicans is probably more appealing because of what it could be, right? Yeah.
Pressure, right? It's just like, they're building. You know what I mean? Like if you're bad for 2 years, you're not going to get fired for that.
No, if you're not a playoff team next year, they pressure me the playoff. But not
no way. Every team in the West is going to be trying to make the playoffs next year, which, by the way, is nuts. But I think that they'll get at least a year.
But if your team isn't like right there at the 9 seed, then they're not going to matter. You know what I mean? Like you can't come out there and win 27 games, right? You have to beat 38-40 competing every night for that spot.
There.
I'm always going to. But I think, too, there's a potential that job can become amazing because if you time it right and you're there Zion's for 5 years. Yeah. And Zion's there 7 years, which or whatever, you know, he could end up being. That's what with restricted free agency, that probably would end up being. And you have Ingram keeps kind of developing as a player. I mean, you've got a chance to have, you know, a really good team, and they got to make sure they make the right move at the right moment, you know, with the cap space to add another player to it. But that's a team that could easily, you know, in 3 years from now, LeBron will be 38 years old. It might still be his league. It might not. It could be, you know, that could be the kind of this team.
It's time.
That could be the team.
Harden will be old then too.
Well, Harden will be old. Curry will be at that age up there. I mean, there a lot of this, right? I mean, I believe Davis, Curry, Harden, all within a year or two of each other, if I'm correct.
I think Davis is much younger than the first two.
Oh, because he didn't go to college as long, right? Curry went to college for 3 years, and Harden went for 2, and Davis went for just 1.
So, you know what's funny is I've kept up with these coaching searches a little bit, but I'm going to the team's SB Nation sites right now to get the names for this.
I couldn't tell you who's on the Oklahoma City
on all three sites for Rockets, Clippers, and Pelicans. There's an article that's saying Ty Lue still feels like the favorite. So I think Ty Lue's going to be kind of a roadblock here.
So I think the top three clearly are Clippers. Let's go Rockets and Pelicans and Rockets, whatever order you want.
Yeah. The Pelicans apparently are interviewing everybody, but I think Woj tweeted, and I don't know if this was like an intentional inclusion, but he said they have like a core four of candidates. And I think, just from gathering from reporting, that Ty Lue, Jason Kidd, Jason Kidd, Stan Van Gundy, and Will Weaver are the four, but I don't know that. I know the first three are probably the three, but I don't know who the fourth one is. But
so do you think the Thunder job is better than the Pacer job?
Because no.
I can make – okay.
The case you make is the case I just kind of made for the Pelicans. They might be the only team in the West not trying this year. You have the longest leash in the world, and it's just all building the whole time.
Yeah, I would say you have a real chance to build, and if the Clippers –
you go 21 and 61 three seasons in a row, your ownership does not give a damn.
And based on the current projection, do you think the Clippers end up actually keeping both their superstars in 2 years from now? I don't. If it keeps going the way it's going, it's going to blow
possible.
Up. And
so
I bet Kawhi will end up with the other L.A. team by the end of it. I mean, that's what
– I was going to say for an assistant making the jump to head coach, I think the Pacers job would be more appealing, but I think a guy like Chauncey, for example, trying to get his first job, maybe the Clippers would be more appealing. I don't know. The Thunder.
Well, so, I don't know. And they also have a very tradable asset in Chris Paul now after really what – I mean, I think he's become he may not be at, like, super plus asset, but he definitely came out this year and proved, Chris Paul, if you can manage his minutes right, can be like an extremely valuable player in the playoffs, especially if you're not having to just max him out the way the Thunder were. You got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who seems to have some talent. You've got Lu Dort, I mean, the superstar of the first round of the playoffs, in my opinion. Fantastic game seven. you just have like some opportunity there to like, you have assets, you can make a move, you just keep drafting, hit right. Like, you have a chance to grow, I guess. And Presti is a great drafting GM. I mean, he's proven that. You give him enough picks and he'll hit on enough.
Hey, there we go. Welcome to Loud City. The Thunder SB Nation blog does not have an article talking about Ty Lue being the favorite for the Thunder.
In my opinion, I think the Thunder might be better than his because there's not as much drama going on there, actually.
That's interesting. I don't agree, but that's okay.
Higher ceiling, maybe lower floor?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, I can agree with that. If they keep Chris Paul, it'll be a fun for the first year.
I mean, we talked about it low-key. I mean, Turner Oladipo matches Chris Paul's salary.
That's true.
And it gets him off his contract. Saves him $21 million in the next 4 years, and they got a young player, Miles Turner, to build around.
Kenny Atkinson, Becky Hammond, Adrian Griffin on the Thunder list, apparently. David Vanterpool, he was on the Pacers list as well. He's the Wolves assistant. So they kind of just taking their time. They're just going to ditz around and hire who they want.
So
I don't know what the Thunder are going to do.
The other question I have for you, of the nine coaches who were hired this offseason, because we're counting the Knicks, who do you think has the most successful first season?
First season?
Yeah.
Compared to expectations or just like that's unfair because obviously the Sixers
have
a better season than the Knicks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let's do compared expectations.
Okay.
And then who ends up having the better 4 or 5 year run compared to expectations?
Best next season? Doc Rivers. I think the Sixers have a good season next year. Four or 5 year run? Whoever the Pelicans hire. I don't care who it is. I think they're going to have the best 4 to 5 year run. But I'm a Zion truther, so I'm not a good person to ask that question too.
See, I feel like Nash is mine for both those answers.
Wow.
I think he's going to be a really good coach. Is that crazy?
It's like Chauncey. Like we talked about, I have no idea. I just have no idea.
If Durant can come back from that injury and be the Kevin Durant he was pre-injury. I mean,
yes, Adam, if Kevin Durant is good, the Knicks will be good. I agree.
Well, no, but like, you still have to build an offense around him and Kyrie. It's easy when you think about it. I mean, you would say, but also like, those are personalities, man. I mean, those are two very strong personalities who I think within probably a year, you could go one or two ways, either be hating each other or loving each other based on what happens. And so that's hard to manage. I mean, it's not easy to manage egos like that because they're just not selfless as some other ego.
We just did all those rankings, and the thesis as we relate it to the Pacers is their job might be not as highly ranked as those, but they aren't really competing for candidates with any of those people. So it might not super matter, right? If they if the guy they want's the guy they want, they can get him.
Well, and I think
if Ty Lue's in their process, it might be another bottleneck situation, like it was looking like with D'Antoni for a second. But it doesn't look like he is, so it might just be whenever they want it now.
I also think if you look at the whole process of coaching, nobody really knows who the next good coach is going to be.
Yes.
There were so many recycled names. I mean, first of all, Billy Donovan and Tom Thibodeau. Donovan was fine, but, like, we all know what he is.
Tom Thibodeau was shocking to me. But
I mean, Thibodeau also, fine. We know they're fine coaches. They're just fine. They're going to, you know, they're not going to wow you, but they're going to be good enough to probably, you know, be in the top 15 or 20 coach for that. So they're not going to be, like, disasters. But, like, nobody knows. Everybody wants to think they know the next great head coach is going to be, and nobody knows, and that's why there's an opportunity here, I guess. It's one of those weird things where, like, if you're just able to interview the right guy and find the right person, you can stand up with them and just notice. I mean, the best example is Boston, who basically traded Doc at the time, considered one of the best coaches in the league, and got Brad Stevens, who's probably a better coach than him, to be honest.
So, as I've said, I think every 2 weeks, we will not be talking about the coaching search again until a significant amount of information.
Maybe they'll hire before Halloween.
That's true. We keep thinking that. I mean, it's just so hard. Like, every week we get like a tiny bit more information, but not enough to do a whole podcast. So we have to wait and do these mega news dump coaching search stuff. But I do think that if they're doing in-person interviews, they're probably pretty close. But what do I know?
I would agree with you. So we're bringing you right now kind of 4 podcasts a week until they hire a coach. Then we'll bring probably switch back to 5 for a little while. We're also in the middle of our player review series. Tony did Jeremy Lamb this week.
Yep.
And in the past, you've done Doug McDermott and Goga.
Correct. Chris.
And I've done Aaron Holiday, TJ Warren, and I don't know the 6th guy I did. I'm trying to remember.
Yes, you do Justin Holiday, Adam.
I did Justin Holiday. That's right. I did both Holidays. that means coming up at some point, we'll just kind of release them as it's going to be Sabonis, Brogdon, Turner, Oladipo, the big names. So we have those, plus some obviously not so big names in Sumner and Leaf, and then the three kind of – the 2-2-way guys in Alizé Johnson. But we'll bring you those this offseason. The draft is November 18th, so we'll have some stuff on that or on the second-round pick. Maybe they'll trade for a first-round pick. We'll see what happens. And then hopefully we hit free agency. And I assume, Tony, in the next couple of weeks, we'll start to hear some rumblings about the CBA or salary cap and what's going on with that, because that's going to be – that's why they pushed the draft back to figure that out.
And that's the next Tony thing.
Tony is the foremost expert on that, and I am the foremost expert at trying to pick apart Tony's words and figure out what he means.
Yeah, I'll do that at pod solo.
or trying to find the loophole in the cap situation.
Make my head explode. Trying to figure out why there's no way the Celtics would do this.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, quick setup before I finish up. I've been sending Tony the most, like, I just go to other teams.
Oh, my gosh. We should really sites okay.
And just send him tweet. Send him fake trade.
Finish your story, and then I'll suggest something for our listeners who are loyal enough to have made it this far.
So the Google AMP algorithm must have me figured out, because it just sends me all these random, like, SB Nation fan side of those kind of blogs, sites, like trades options, and they're always just terrible. So I read them and then I send to Tony.
He sends it to me,
and Tony says this is awful.
I don't want to dunk on writers. You know what I mean? Like, I get the grind of having to pump out a bunch of just shit all the time. Like, I hated it, but you got to do it to get to at least like a meaningful point of writing. Anywho, we could do an entire. Probably a whole show a week on like the worst fake Pacers trade we saw this week. Some of them are just so bad.
Do with trades, that the thing you have to do is you have to think about, like, you have to do it like a point system, right? What is the value? Like, how many points they're getting back? And most teams are not gonna do a trade where they lose the point value. Like, I usually do it like you get everybody 1 through 5, right? Unless they're forced to do that, right? Like the Pacers for Sabonis and Oladipo are kind of forced into that trade, right? So, like, there was one look at, I don't know what it was, but like, a team's not going to send you like a Doug McDermott and a Jeremy Lamb for like a guy who is of same caliber player, because that's 2 positive players for only 1 positive player, because they're not in rebuilding mode or not in some sell off mode right now. So, I mean, that's all. That's just
no, Adam. No, you were wrong. The Pacers should be trading all their players for second round picks. That is what I see.
Yeah, and also second round picks have absolutely no value. They're literally worth not the paper they're printed on. They are more worthless than the Zimbabwe dollar.
and on that note, we will catch you guys.
But you know what I mean. Like, yes. If you had 10 second round picks, does that even equal 1 first round pick?
Yes.
Outside the top 20? If it's, I mean, inside the top 20, I guess. Sorry, inside the top 20.
Oh, no.
Right? I mean, like, If you sent me 10 second round picks, I might give you the 25th pick, but I'm not giving you the 15th pick.
I agree. Oh, so, sorry.
So anyways, it's now 11:30 Eastern time, so Tony is going to sleep. He's getting tired.
No, I have to run still.
Oh, he has to run. Okay. I've been dragging Tony on this podcast for too long. Anyways, you can follow Tony at TeastNBA. You can follow me at FreedomAdam5. You can follow our podcast, Ask Locked On Pacers. Like I said, we're bringing you about 4 or 5 podcasts a week as the season progresses. We'll bring you some more podcasts next week and a lot of player reviews and some more breakdown of the news. That is all for Locked On Pacers podcast. You guys have a great day.